Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK, and Sean here. Steve on his way into the Sunbury Motors Studios. Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Be with you live till 5, and then we'll have our late day news roundup with Sarah Benick. Phillies baseball tonight on WKOK, hopefully at 6:35 after the snow out yesterday in New York. Phillies and the Mets, and then they'll get another game in tomorrow afternoon. So no Steve Jones Show tomorrow and Thursday here on WKOK. Phillies will be at Citizens Bank Park for their home opener Thursday afternoon. So tonight we got Ben Lively and Matt Harvey, your starting pitchers, Phillies-Mets. 6:35 will be the airtime, and first pitch at 7:10 here on WKOK. One early game this afternoon, currently in progress. KC leading Detroit 1-0. Bottom of the eighth, Detroit was swept over the weekend by the Pittsburgh Pirates. So last night, Villanova getting their second national championship in the last 3 years. How about Dante DiVincenzo? Off the bench, 31 points. He deleted his Twitter account. The most outstanding player of the Final Four. Yeah, his sudden celebrity led to some people on social media to look up his account. Actually, his account had more than 17,000 tweets, was mostly active when DiVincenzo was in high school. But after the game, Villanova basketball account tweeted that DiVincenzo's account had been hacked. So maybe he'll pop back on Twitter sometime. We'll have to wait and see. But pretty incredible last night for DiVincenzo, 31 points, the most by a sixth man off the bench in a national championship game. Pretty good first half. Second half, though, Mo Wagner, he needed some help. People other than him to take part in the game. Although he did score about 5 or 6 seconds into the start of the second half, but boy, Villanova cranked it up, extended the lead, and that game was over rather quickly. And every single game in the NCAA tournament for Villanova was all double-digit wins. So quite a few people were saying going into this tournament, yeah, it's wide open. Really no clear-cut favorite. But when you look at all the results that Villanova racked up in the last couple of weeks, very dominating. And a guy that we have on the show quite a bit, Matt Leon, from KYW 1060 in Philadelphia, he tweeted this morning a question. Now that Jay Wright has won 2 national championships, would he be considered the best Big Five coach in history? That's a great question. I mean, look at the other coaches that have coached in the Big Five. You know, John Chaney, to name a few. Raleigh Massimino, the late, great Raleigh Massimino. But Jay Wright's now got 2 titles. That would have been a great question to pitch to Dick Girardi. No other person really has such a phenomenal basketball acumen than Steve's broadcast partner on the Penn State Sports Network. So, it could be something that Steven Matt will kick around his next time on the show. You can find us on social media, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, our Twitter handle at Steve Jones PSU, and we invite you to subscribe to our Steve Jones Show podcast, available on both the Apple Podcast app, iTunes, and Google Play. And when you subscribe, the shows will automatically drop right to your smartphone or tablet, and usually happens by 6 p.m. Eastern every Monday through Friday, right after we polish off a live show on WKOK. We'll podcast it out about an hour or so later. And we always have 3 months of shows archived at stevejonesshow.com.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Great to have you with us. Boy, Villanova is just really good. I mean, look, they were the best team all season. And it turned out in the end they won the national championship. They just come at you in waves. Brunson, Spellman, hey, DiVincenzo.
Yeah, how long was that stretch that Brunson was on the bench? About 7-8 minutes, something like that?
Yeah.
Boy, that team really, really cranked it up when he was on the sideline.
Exactly. They
just such balance they have.
Yeah. So
one observation I heard, they don't look like, at quick glance, they don't look like a young team on the court. They look like a mature team.
Yeah, they play that way. Now, look, this is where I'll make a quick point about Pat and Jay. Because obviously Pat worked for Jay. When they went to the Final Four in 2009, Patrick Chambers was the assistant coach. He was Jay's top assistant. I'll give you a note on similar style. You never see Jay Wright get upset with shot selection by Villanova, do you? You never do. Well, you never see Patrick Chambers. You ever see Patrick Chambers get upset about shot selection for Penn State? Never. It's Pat gets upset about the defensive end all the time. Jay gets upset about the defensive end. But when it comes to shot selection, neither one of them gets upset at their teams about shot selection. And that's important in today's game. I mean, shot selection is important, but keeping it in a perspective is important. Because, again, what end of the floor is a player interested in? I mean, you ever see Nathan Davis get upset about shot selection?
No.
I don't.
No.
I never do. He'll get more upset about the defensive end. John Crispin transferred from Penn State to UCLA. You want to know one of the reasons why? One of the reasons he did was that every time he'd take a shot and it didn't go in, and some of them were good shots, some weren't, he'd be yanked out of the game. You can't do that with today's players. Now, you can't have them being idiots. You can't do that. I mean, there's a way that things work. But the really good coaches do not get cranked up by shot selection. It's the defensive end they get cranked up about.
So speaking of coaches, I just mentioned this a minute or two right before you turned on the mic. Our great friend Matt Leon, who's right there and right in the middle of things in Philadelphia, he posted this question this morning on Twitter. So is Jay Wright now the greatest coach in Big Five history? If not, who would you put ahead of him on that list? I said, that'd be a great question for DJ, too.
Yeah. I mean, you look at back in Big Five history, it was obviously Jay. And Jay deserves to be in the thick of the conversation. But, you know, there's also John Chaney, Harry Litwack. I mean, for what he did at Penn all those years, Fran Dunphy at Penn, Jimmy Boyle, and Phil Martelli at St. Joe's. Speedy Morris? And what he did at LaSalle, both men's and women's basketball. I think I mentioned Rolly, didn't I? Rolly Massimino. Jack McKinney. Jack Ramsey. You got some pretty good ones in there, you know. Now, it's also different eras, different ways of playing. But I think I mentioned a lot of names there to at least consider. Jimmy Lynam. I didn't mention Jimmy Lynam, which I should have. My apologies to D for not mentioning Jimmy Lynam. I mean, Dick Harter did a great job at Penn. So there are a lot of them over the years. A lot of them. Very few cities have the depth of history that Philadelphia does in basketball. Great history. And what Jay's doing today with... Look, the rules are different, one and dones. How long do you get to keep players? How long can you keep groups together? That's why, see, eras are different. Back in the era when Jack Ramsey was there and so forth, you know, you kept players for 4 years. Yeah, players leaving early. Guy Rogers didn't leave early. Tom Gola didn't leave early. I mean, they stayed all the way through. I mean, it's just different time, different era. So when you examine it, Jay Wright's going to be in the thick of the conversation. Also, the number of great teams, or should I say the number of really, really good teams, there's a greater depth of really good teams now that maybe didn't exist 40 and 50 years ago. I don't think that's talked about often enough. There may not be a great team out there, like 1969 UCLA kind of team or 1996 Kentucky team, something like that. I think you've got a lot, you've got some really, really good teams today. Villanova, obviously, is a program. I mean, the longevity is great. You know, the first time I ever saw Jay Wright coach in person was when he was at Hofstra. And Kevin, of course, is on with us on Friday. And you heard Kevin and I talking about, hey, look, the first time we saw this guy coach, we're like, yo, this guy can coach. You could see it. This was... December 2000. Almost 2 decades ago. God, I'm old. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. All right. Great to have you with us. They were just that good all year, Villanova. Yeah, you're going to stumble from time to time. It's when you really get to know your team a little bit. That's the kind of players you have. It's, you know, how they respond when there's a loss. And do they bounce back? When Villanova, what, they lose 4 games all year? They are good. No getting around it. And now the off-season begins. And the off-season begins with coaching movement and the other part being what we refer to as I refer to as the waiver wire. And that happens to be all the transfers. And grad transfers. And grad transfers in particular. You got a lot of players that have entered their name into the draft like Tony Carr did and got agents. Now, you expected some of them. I'll tell you one that surprised me that didn't get an agent was Alonzo Trier of Arizona. And Corey Sanders, for example, at Rutgers, he entered in and got an agent. Jackson from Maryland, agent. Jackson from Michigan State, agent. Bridges, as expected, agent. They've all done that. And Shamari Pons, St. Jude. A lot of these guys I've seen in person, which is interesting. So it's short term for Penn State. Short term. But let's do this in two terms. Because Troy said this yesterday, and Troy was talking about Josh's academic deal and about Watkins' injury. Let me just clarify a couple of quick things so that Troy has a better handle on this. Okay, Josh does not really have an academic problem, all right? And in private, I can explain it better, but he doesn't, okay? I'm not going to explain it over the air. The fact he was back playing tells you he doesn't have an academic problem. Had an academic problem, he would have been out for the year. Watkins and his injury, the blue-white game is 2 weeks from Saturday. If Penn State were playing basketball on blue-white Saturday, Watkins could play. Hey, that's how close he is to being back. So I hope, Troy, that clarifies your comments a little bit yesterday. Again, if Reeves had an academic problem, he would not have played the rest of the season. Once they cleared up what they had to get cleared up, he was back playing again. And I'm not going to get into the explanation about the twists and turns of it. And Watkins, I had a long talk with Mike on Sunday night a week ago. And I was asking about range of motion and things like that. And then I talked to the team doctor. I said, look, I said, 2-3 weeks? I said, yeah. And this was a week ago we talked about that. So if Penn State were playing basketball blue-white weekend, there would be a really good chance that Mike Watkins could play. That's how far along he is. So I hope that clarifies that. But short-term, you lose Tony Carr and Shep Garner. Short-term, obviously, that's hard to overcome. But then, okay, how do you make it work? Well, long-term, recruiting-wise, they can't throw in your face any longer. You can't get to the NBA if you go to Penn State. Between Tim Frazier and Tony Carr, that argument now goes outside the boards. You can get to the NBA by playing basketball at Penn State. You could be drafted. The only area for Tony that I don't like about the agent is not that the fact is Penn State career is over with. I expected him to go regardless. But what if he gets hurt during the combines? Not out of the realm of possibility. Now you've put yourself into a corner a bit.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle's worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us. Chris Soleri, Lansing State Journal, who was at the Final Four, is going to join us. Neil Coulong, USA Today. Time now for this day in sports history. 1977, the Montreal Canadiens became the first NHL team to win 60 games in the season. They beat the Washington Capitals 2-1 to end the regular season with a record of 60 wins, 8 losses, and 12 ties. Now, this is 1977. Let's be honest about it. I mean, does beating the Capitals count? Okay. Just joking. 1985, the Major League Baseball Players Association agreed to a proposal of the team owners to expand the 1985 League Championship Series from a best-of-5 to a best-of-7. Can you say money grab anybody? Major League Baseball, if you want to deal in ideology here and not reality, idealistically, Major League Baseball should be a 144-game season. Lop off 9 games at the beginning, lop off 9 games at the end. Where instead you're starting the Major League Baseball season this weekend coming up. You're ending the Major League Baseball season and starting the playoff, and you're starting the playoffs the last weekend of September. But realistically, can't do that. The owners need the 9 home dates apiece. Because I'd be talking about lopping off 18 games. That's 9 home, 9 away. Well, these owners need those 9 games. Well, the League Championship Series goes to a best of 7. They need the extra games. It's as simple as that. 2002, Michael Jordan, then with the Washington Wizards, announced that he was done for the season due to a knee injury. And George W. Bush, 2006, threw out the first pitch of the season at a Cincinnati Reds home game. And that is this day in sports history. Or as the Sioux would say, d'histoire. Ever since he's gone to digital media, have you noticed he's become a little more sophisticated? I hear nothing.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to...
try to picture it?
Yeah.
Struggling?
A little bit.
All right.
Yeah, having a cup of coffee while having the, you know, pinky finger out. Classy.
Dave Ritchie just drove off the road. All right. Neil Coulong, USA Today. Always great to talk with him. Get him on the show here. Where is Neil here? There he is. I think we got him somewhere.
As always, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Okay. I got to start again, like everybody else does, with Le'Veon Bell, which is, all right, what I see, do you want it $17 million or whatever? You and I both know, on the open market, if Le'Veon Bell were a free agent this second, how much, just give me an estimate, like a couple million dollars either side. How much could he command per year on, based on what you know about the league's salary structure?
I would probably put him around 14. That might even be a little bit trumped up just simply because at this point in free agency now, the teams that could have spent money already have, and I don't think anybody's anticipating Bell coming onto the market. I think he would probably, more than likely, I could see him doing like a 1 or 2 year deal somewhere else just to, mm-hmm. because of the climate where we are right now. But I think, you know, he might even be able to negotiate 2 year, $30 million, something like that, with a no tag clause, something to that effect. But I don't think he can reasonably expect that much money. I mean, the wide receiver market just hit that level last year, and there's still not even very many receivers that are at that level. Antonio Brown obviously being one of them. It's really hard for Le'Veon Bell to suggest that he's had the same kind of path that Antonio Brown has. I mean, outside of, you know, taking Facebook live shots and, you know, in a post-game locker room, Antonio Brown hasn't exactly found himself in trouble the same way that Bell has. So there's more of a risk with Bell. I think he would probably know that as well. But, you know, it collectively bargained right for them to get to free agency, and I think that's really more or less what he wants to do. I think he probably knows by this point the Steelers aren't going to pay him that, and he wants to set his value high. I understand where he's coming from, but realistically, I just don't see it.
Which then brings me to the next part. Within the first three rounds, so I'm going to open it up three rounds here, would you be surprised if the Steelers selected a running back?
I wouldn't be, just because I don't necessarily think they need to look at right now what are we going to do to replace Le'Veon Bell after next season. I think there's value among running backs. Rashad Penny out of San Diego State, I'm really intrigued with. I think he's probably a second or a third round guy. He's a very good football player, and it's just with the shelf life of your average NFL player, you're constantly having to replace positions anyway. So I don't necessarily think they need to look at the running back position as replace Le'Veon Bell, as opposed to we can get a really good football player who can help contribute to our offense. I think suggestions of maybe, you know, Darius Geis in the first round, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thought, simply because if he were to fall to 28, I think a lot of good things for the Steelers would have happened. They'd get a great player much later in the first round. Definitely probably the best first round pick they would have made since DeCastro back in 2012. So there's value at the position within those first three rounds of this year, and I don't necessarily think that means one, that they have to replace Le'Veon Bell and they're looking to do so, or two, there's no faith at all in James Conner either. You know, there's still something of a future there for them. Very few offenses run as much of what they're doing through just one running back the way the Steelers do with Bell. That also creates the problem in the dilemma for both sides. You have to find other people that are going to be able to replace his production, and for Bell, his value is going to go way up.
It all depends on what you want, but you and I both know that there are not six legitimate first-round NFL draft picks based on tradition out there that are quarterbacks, right? They're just based on tradition. But you and I both know that based on need, you may see as many as six go. How much does that now benefit the Steelers, because they won't draft a quarterback? How much does that benefit the Steelers in the first couple of rounds because of the way things could fall?
You know, for me with the Steelers, we're getting to a point in the NFL, and this is both from a playing context as well as the business side of it. That first round pick comes with a fifth year option at basically the transition tag level, which is, you know, really not all that much for a quarterback, considering probably like $14 or $15 million. You got him on the cheap for the first 4 years. So if you have a franchise level quarterback, you're getting him for a steal if he's going into that fifth year option in terms of the salary cap. To me, that makes any guy that I put a second round grade on, you have to take him in the first.
Right.
You have to have that option here. Otherwise, what happens to you? You're the Oakland Raiders. You give Derek Carr a gigantic extension, and then he falls apart in his fourth season, it was. They would have had a cheap last year and now a good negotiating position to not – he probably could have shaved off $30 million on his extension just mm-hmm. because he fell apart so badly last season. They lost a lot of money in that, and that's simply because they drafted him in the second round and not the first. Therefore, for me, I think the Steelers are wise – to give a look at Lamar Jackson, I forget the other guy's name, the one from Oregon State. Those types of guys are.
You're talking about Mason Rudolph of Oklahoma State.
Yes, that's it. I'm doing well today. You look at a guy like Rudolph. He has probably not the biggest ceiling ever, but he's a very steady, consistent quarterback. And in the past, I would say most people would probably see him as a second-round guy. I think that's exactly why the Steelers would want to take a look at him at 28 if he's still there. I don't necessarily think that he will be, but it's also good for, you know, trade-up, trade-down scenarios to get a good look at who the quarterbacks are and give people the sense that you might actually entertain the thought of taking one. I think the Steelers are now in that territory, and they'd be wise to do it because, let's say, Roethlisberger plays out the next three seasons like he wants to do. You've got your future quarterback for two more years on the relatively cheap end of the spectrum. You've got a long-term plan in place to replace the position. You've also got a viable backup for that time. I think because of that, it makes a lot of sense. If Rudolph were to be there, I could see why they would want to do that. I'm just not sure that they will.
You've mentioned Lamar Jackson before. What is it about him you like?
I just think he's such a big play threat. I think the NFL today, you're seeing that more and more. A little bit less focus on accuracy and more on can he hit the big play down the field? Can he make plays with his legs? He has that big play potential. You see that with Deshaun Watson, and a big part of the reason why Houston blew up when he played last season. He hit everything down the field, and he was a threat to run as well. The thing with Jack, get good accuracy out of him. He doesn't throw the most catchable ball all the time, but it seems to me like he's better on the move and he's better at deeper throws than he is on the shorter and intermediate stuff. But above anything else, what I really like about him, he doesn't make bad decisions with the football. He's not the most, he's got a good enough arm. He's not incredibly accurate. He's got some footwork issues I think he needs to work out, but he makes the right decision with the ball. And it's not as if Louisville's offense is not complicated. You know, that's a very pro-friendly type of offense. Right. The running element that they added into it was specifically because of Jackson and his athleticism. He's probably not going to do a whole lot of that kind of stuff at the NFL, but I think, a play breaks down, he can do something spontaneous, and he's able to make plays outside the pocket. To me, that's really where big plays come from, and we saw a lot of that with Roethlisberger. As in many ways, he kind of ushered in that era into the NFL. He was at his best making guys miss, getting out of the pocket, keeping the play alive, and then hitting somebody 20-25 yards down the field. Those are all big plays, and he lived on that for the better part of his career. Jackson, to me, is similar in that sense. I think he's capable of seeing down the field well enough. He knows where the throw needs to go. And he has a career of good decisions. He just really didn't make bad decisions with the football. And I can't necessarily say that for anybody save maybe Mayfield among the other guys who are out there. I'd take him probably over anybody in this draft if I had to have a quarterback to sit and groom for a year. And that's a big part of the reason why. He's just a very smart football player, and he's a great athlete.
Neil, always a pleasure. Appreciate the time, my friend.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong, USA Today. The rebuttal of the suit when it comes to Steeler matters will be on the after show. Probably grumbling in a car by himself on Route 15. We'll come back with more in a moment. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. All right. Unless you're around something, like all the time, then you don't really know what really is going on. And I'll give you an indication of this. Happened today at Augusta National. Did you see who played a practice round together? Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods. Now, for years, it has been thought that these two were bitter rivals and never talked to each other. I heard Jack Nicklaus tell a story a while ago. They were at the President's Cup. President's Cup or the Ryder Cup? One of the two. And they were just done with the day, right? And then Phil grabs a ping pong paddle. He says, "Hey, Ty." He says, "Let's play." So they boom, they go out, bang, bang, bang. They play, and Woods wins. All right, boom. Then they play again. Woods wins, and Phil says, "Wait a minute, look." He says, "There's not as much room here on my side. Let's switch sides." So they switch sides, and Phil wins. And so he says, "All right, great. 3 out of 5. Tiger says, "No, 2 out of 3. We're done." Right. But that was years ago. So now they go out and they play a practice round. Okay. So afterward, Tiger Woods was talking about Phil Mickelson. I remember it was after, what was it, the Ryder Cup? Tiger Woods was an alternate captain. And when Mickelson was done with his round, he's like, the two of them threw each other, their arms around each other, the whole deal. People were like, what is this? All right? He said, Woods said, Mickelson is very, very competitive. He's feisty. He's determined. He always wants to win. It has served him well. He believes in himself an awful lot. And you see the chances he's taken over the years. And the reason why he does that is because he knows that he can do it. And he has that belief. And that's what's happened. That's why he's won so many tournaments and why he's won so many major championships, that he truly believes he can pull it off. That's what you have to have. You have to have that kind of belief. I mean, these guys were like, you know, nobody respects and appreciates what Tiger Woods has done for the game more than me, Mickelson said. And by the way, he said that before, because look, these guys don't have the purses today without Tiger Woods. They don't. Whether you like Tiger Woods or not, if you are a professional player, you know darn well that you don't have the purses or the TV ratings today without Tiger Woods. Woods is one of those guys that if you love him, you want to watch him. If you're curious, you want to watch him. And if you don't like him, you want to watch him. Okay? Well, more and more people are loving him now because, you know, you see that there's a genuine enthusiasm for Tiger Woods out there now when he plays. When I've covered the U.S. Open and Tiger has played, and I've covered the U.S. Open a few times. You know, we've done the show from the U.S. Open a couple times. Did it at Marion, did it at Oakmont. Now, Tiger didn't play at Oakmont. But I found the crowd around Woods to be as follows. People absolutely love him and adore him. Then there's a section that is there because, hey, it's Tiger Woods. We got to watch him play. And then there's a group that is around watching, hoping he does not succeed. Yeah. Now, Mickelson, on the other hand, may not have the gallery that Woods does, but everybody in the gallery loves him. It's the way it is. Look, those two understand what it's like to play at the highest level because they both have won. Nobody respects and appreciates what he's done for the game more than me, Mickelson said. They said that the duo at one point went 7 under par in a 5-hole stretch. That's pretty good. He says, I texted Tiger a while ago when he was playing at the Valspar. It was like a different time continuum. He says, I felt myself pulling so hard for him. It was unusual. I want him to play well. I'm excited to see him play so well, and he is playing well. Woods acknowledged a respect for Mickelson as time passed and their time together on various Ryder Cup and President Cup's teams, especially the last few years when Woods served as an assistant captain. Woods says he's now felt his best in the last 7 or 8 years. Which is good. But again, it's... It's been an interesting year. It's been an interesting year because Mickelson has won. Woods finished second. McIlroy has won. Bubba Watson's won twice. And then on the women's side, Michelle Wee won. I mean, so it's been interesting to see. That's happened. Let's see. Final USA Today coaches poll. Penn State basketball gets 30th. I mentioned the KenPom ratings rated 19th, 20th ESPN BPI. Penn State earned 19 votes in the final USA Today coaches poll, and that puts them 30th. So there you go. Supposed to join our old friend Bob Soci. Thursday, I think. Bob wants me to do something on his show about the NFL draft.
Ah, very good. Yes.
Well, I don't know. Well, I don't know why, because, I mean, the Patriots, you know, they it takes them a long time before they do draft. I mean, what do they want to know what I think? I mean, what the heck? So.
You should text him back, what, Belichick's taking a look at Barkley? What?
Well, it's funny, because I talked to Deshaun Hamilton yesterday. I'm going to tell you exactly what I told Deshaun Hamilton. Exactly to him. I said, you know what I really love about you? He says, what's that? I said, you have earned everything you have. Nothing has been handed to Deshaun Hamilton. He has earned everything he has. All that work that he did leading into the Fiesta Bowl, all that work that it led into the East-West game, then the invite to the Senior Bowl and all the work he did that weekend in the games and what he's done in the combines, he's earned every accolade he's been getting. He's outworked people. He comes from a military family. He's got that same work ethic.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.